What do I mean by dark arts? Myself as a player, if I got contact in box, I'm going down. It's not diving. It was a foul on Will. He tried to stay up because he was honest. So sometimes you get punished for being a nice guy.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Okay, you're very welcome. Kathleen is here. Kathleen, good morning to you. Good evening to you. I should really say good evening to you. Obviously, we're used to the mornings. It's the Off The Ball breakfast takeover of Friday night's Off The Ball. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Quite the week. Trying to trawl through the history books of Irish sport to decide who are the four women to put on Mount Rushmore.
I've lost a lot of sleep this week.
I'd say. Did you change your mind? So for everybody who's unaware, regular listeners to the evening show will know that we've had many of these Mount Rushmore candidates. Some who didn't make it in the end, who I'm sure if they'd known about the fact they weren't going to make it, might not have showed up for the show, but they did.
They made it onto their individual ones.
They did. That was the point. They did, yeah. We'll talk about that in a minute. Mick and Miller also here. How did your week change from the start of the week? You obviously had your inherent football bias. How did that go for you?
Well, it ended up with no football on the ultimate Mount Rushmore. I was convinced.
How do you feel about that now?
I'm confident in it, although I was accused of being a jealous ex for not putting Emma Byrne on it because she left us for the Ireland team, which I thought was rather rude, but also maybe a little bit accurate. I feel confident in it. I think what I've really enjoyed about the last week is hearing people passionately talk about the sportswomen that have made an impact on their lives. And that did sway me massively because it made me go back and look at tape and look at matches and races that I maybe wasn't totally conscious of because it might have been a little bit before my time, or I might have been too young, or maybe just moments that I'd forgotten about in the constant whirl of sport that we live in. And getting to relive all that and relive it through other people's eyes was really enjoyable.
Yeah, it was brilliant. And loads of brilliant contributors over the course of the week kind of just pointing out the distance that we've travelled and the distance we still have to come. There was a really compelling case made for Rosemary Smith by Cliona Foley during the week. And one of the other points that Cliona made was that there was three of our most renowned sports journalists wrote a book about 50 Irish sports people, legends of the game. Two of them were women, and one of those was Michelle Smith. So you would like to think things have changed significantly. That was the point that Cliona was making, but we definitely still have a distance to travel.
Yeah, if anyone wants to write the sportswomen's book, I am open for that, because I think there's so many great stories. And Rosemary Smith, not to spoil what our ultimate Mount Rushmore is if someone hasn't listened to The Breakfast Show yet, she is the one that for me was so close to making it, because what she did was so remarkable and so different to any other sportswoman that we have. That was the thing that really, really swayed me. But unfortunately, she didn't make it in the end.
So tell us the four. Sorry,
I was just going to say on Rosemary Smith, Ger, what I loved about this week in general, and she's the best example of it, is that I don't think she was even a favourite going into the category she was in, which was kind of best of the rest. And then as the week went on, by the time we got to that, she was a guarantee to be on it. And then the case that was made on the show for her had Kathleen, and I was feeling the exact same way. Looking at this yesterday when I was kind of predicting who they'd eventually pick, I was like, Rosemary Smith has to be on this, or she's very, very close, or she's fifth or sixth. And that's great, because that means the stories were told really well all week, because we got to a point where it was a completely different outcome than what was expected.
I think Nathan biased the whole thing by making sure that Cora Staunton was on the promo that got played out all week around this. And I do think that, so frequently I'll bump into friends of mine and go, Jesus, the Mayo agenda is very high up. And I was like, no, it's not really. It's just that but now I appreciate that I've been somehow a facilitator for this over the years. And I'd like to apologise on behalf of all non-Mayo people for allowing that to happen on our watch.
Yet you don't argue with Cora's place on the...
I think you can make cases against Cora and Rachel in a way that you can't against Katie and Sonia. So I've given it away, but give us the big reveal here.
So our Mount Rushmore is...
Well, you've already done it on social and on Off The Ball Breakfast this morning.
This is not
breaking news to anybody.
Katie Taylor, Sonia O'Sullivan, those were our two absolute definites. And then we had Rachel Blackmore, who both Sarah O'Donovan and Jenny Claffey, who helped pick them with me this morning, were very strong on, and Cora Staunton as our final addition to the Mount Rushmore of Irish sportswomen.
Yeah. Like, I think that it's funny how the emotional connection that we have with the achievements is visceral, certainly in three of the four cases, I think. With Cora, it's more longevity, two sports, dragging a county, kicking and screaming to the top table. But will we go through some of the, we've got audio of bits and pieces here I think for me this is the best piece of commentary in Irish sports history. It's Sean Bon Brannock, it's the Olympic Games, it's 2012, it's Katie Taylor with all of the pressure of having basically invented the sport of women's boxing, and it's supposed to be a procession. The Irish have taken over the arena and Ochagava is unfortunately punching the head off Katie. You're not allowed. And it's such a close fight. But here is Sean Bon Brannock paying proper testimony to what he's seeing.
Agus Chacún. 10 points to 9. Katie Taylor! Katie Taylor, champion of Europe, champion of power, like a champion Olympics and job. Tasha Groots and Katie Taylor, a later husband, as an east and sea of a bountation. Tashi Hain, Agus Dead, Agus Billy, Agus Far, Georgia, Tasha the Pant, Baragui, Hoykele. Oh, later than Loud Mahamar, Bluech on the Hidden, Maud Gone. Grania Wayne, Mary Robinson, Maura Vakati, Hashtag the Ordinan, Shuddy and Van, Tan Rusha Hagari, Inan Ungari Rusha, Tak Knachara, Tak Kalignachara, Tashi Longa Aid, Agus Duchi Raid, Gora Jebwent to Katie Taylor, so that you could use Jack Savonia, Horbe, and Yetaka Hafoid, oh, Yetaka Van, Katie Taylor, Agus Dadida, the Metrochter of the Lothish, Jack the Lalas Gorbian. Hashada Nokot is good at Kumokri. Is he of Cecile going to venture his creve Olympic of Hartley? Marachi, neither. I am creve, neither I am dance no Olympics. I can just brought the head and Katie Taylor.
Poor Zora Auntie didn't get a name check.
No, Far Georgia.
I still get goosebumps whenever I listen to that.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's so good.
It's a tremor on his first Katie.
Mm. But to be able to get it back, because like everybody else gone, totally gone, I think. In those circumstances, but to be able to get it back was pretty amazing. But I like, there was no doubt about Katie Taylor all week. That was kind of
no. And even Emma, who produced the show, Emma Carroll, she went down Grafton Street yesterday and just got a few vox pops off people on the street as to who they would pick, and Katie Taylor was by far the biggest choice for most people. Sonia was a close second, and then different names were scattered in for the rest, but Katie was definitely the one that was living at the forefront of people's minds.
And maybe because we can't talk about it, like there's nothing to talk about in so many respects. It's like, it's a bit like Man City. You just, the greatness is assumed that we take for granted a little bit, do we?
Yeah, and we took Katie Taylor for granted in 2012 because everyone had assumed, because of her record across Europeans, EUs, the world, she'd only suffered a handful of defeats as an amateur up until that point. And because, as you already alluded to, she had gone to Chicago to the test event and had basically shown to the organisers of the Olympics that women's boxing was a credible sport that should be included for 2012. There was always this feeling that it was going to be an anointing in London for Katie Taylor. And even when she had a few difficult fights against Natasha Jonas and like that final, we were just assuming that she was going to pick up gold. And it doesn't necessarily work out all that way. We remember the loss against Pockinen in 2016 when everyone thought she was going to go double gold medal at that point. Sometimes sport doesn't have the perfect ending to stories or narratives that we create in our head. And definitely we expected 2012 she was just going to coast home.
But except for 2016 though, she's always answered any questions. So like that, we do take it for granted for sure, I think. But then when it comes to it, she always, so the final in 2012, you know, wasn't as the procession it seemed to be. So it made it all the more emotional. But turning professional, how that worked, how she was able to headline shows, sell out, win all the titles, obviously. But then when those real tests come, look, oh, maybe Serrano, maybe she's 2 years late for Serrano, and she goes and digs deep and has the fight of her career. Then she's beaten by Cameron and goes and has the fight of her career again at like the age that she's at as well. Like, so Katie does have this ability to kind of rouse, I think, something really deep inside us by being that ultimate sports person, by consistently kind of rising to the occasion when it's needed. And it's like, for her to be, we've very, very few people in any Irish sport that's ever been like undoubtedly the best of her field, you know, and she is pound for pound, or at least has been for a long period of her career, pound for pound, the best women's boxer in the world. I don't know if we've ever had anybody at her level at any sport.
Yeah, I think there was a period of time when McIlroy was probably there.
McIlroy was never like
was he ever the guy?
He might have been. He might have been. He might be the best golfer in the world at times, but I don't know if he was ever so far.
Never a dead cert to win.
Yeah,
he's in the conversation. Yeah, as many have been.
Yeah, look, I also think the failure is really important in terms of the comeback is the thing that marks you out in sport as well, because most sports careers, the jockeys always tell you, you know, you win a tiny percentage of the time and you're incredibly successful, because a lot of jockeys never ever win. But I do think that the setbacks she had, you know, 4 years later and then going professional, and then even then there are setbacks along the way to get to the point where she is now, like, we shouldn't in any way take her for granted. And maybe people don't anymore, but there was certainly a period where it was like, I think turning professional has been really important.
Yep. Mm.
Like it has, again, she's done for professional boxing what she did for amateur boxing, and it's truly remarkable. So
we might not get to see Chantelle Cameron versus Katie Taylor 3, mm-hmm. but for me, as far as the CV goes, Cameron 2 is as important as pretty much anything else that Katie Taylor's done during her career.
Definitely, definitely. And that was, like, again, a totally emotional occasion for anybody who's watching it, because you're so invested in her getting to the end of her career healthy, and these fights are going to take it out of you in the long run. So if there is no third fight, and if she was to give up now, I'd be like, yeah, great, well done, you made all your money, you
retire as an undisputed two-weight world champion.
It's not bad, is it? Yeah.
Funny enough, Gavin Casey actually mentioned when he was on the show making the case for Katie about her making the money, and I thought it was an interesting point. I wouldn't have thought of it at all, but he was like, she took that chance, and a lot of people kind of said there's no money in this for her, there's no, you know what I mean, this will be a short term thing, she, you know, it's a bit of a risk, she could stay with the high performance and make a career out of that, and she's obviously blown away all expectations on that, and we're coming up on however many, 7 or 8 years now of Katie being a professional and topping bills and making a really, really serious living for herself because of a chance that she took.
Like, more so than taking her for granted, I think sometimes we underestimate how shrewd she is. And I mean that in a positive way as well. You know, she made the business case for the Olympics, for women's boxing. She made the business case for it as a professional sport. And now it's just unquestionable that it's going to be on cards, that the likes of Eddie Hearn are going to promote the life out of it. Does it need another star to come along off the back of her if she is kind of coming to that tail end of her career? Possibly. But that doesn't mean that there isn't someone in the ranks coming up who's watched Katie Taylor over the last decade and said...
Well, I think we're seeing it with the Irish boxing team now. Mm. That's like, it takes 7, 8, 9 years for the kids who are 10, 12 to get to a level where they're competing for medals internationally. But I think it might have been Gavin Casey who said the women's boxing team are going to be more successful than the men's over the next couple of years, that we've reached that stage where... And that's a legacy. You know, we often talk about there being no legacy from hosting events or any of that kind of weird thing that we assume will leave a legacy, but actually that inspiration is there. And I think there's something similar in Irish athletics with Sonia.
Yeah,
but Sarah Lavin actually said that to me when I interviewed her on this morning show. She said exactly that she felt that the effect, when she was picking her Mount Rushmore, she felt like the effect of Sonia was being felt now, and that's why the athletics team are where they are at.
Yeah, I think that's all, we'll get to Sonia in a minute, but I think that's all sports, you know, female sports stars in the country. I think we did a show few years ago, about women's sport, and I think we box popped an awful lot of people for the live show, and every single one of them, including Katie Taylor, said that Sonia was the an inspiration for her. So she obviously shined the light. But one thing about the legacy, we're talking about, like, the Irish female boxing team and Irish athletes for Sonia, Katie might be one of the only Irish people that's ever left a worldwide legacy. Mm-hmm. Because she showed the way for women's boxing as a sport in general. You know, and I don't know if we've ever had anybody like that, you know, a full-on pioneer of a fledgling sport. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah. It's like, it's not measured by belts and it's not measured by medals, but even the fact that Katie Taylor has been able to emerge from where Eddie Hearn understandably promoted her as kind of a second main event to Anthony Joshua in her early stages in her professional career, to the point that particularly after Madison Square Garden, it was, you know what, Katie Taylor's a draw in and of herself, and therefore we're actually going to be able to fill out cards and put her as a headliner, and people will watch this and will pay pay-per-view or pick up a DAZN subscription in order to watch her. Like, that's an incredible achievement in and of itself, because you can understand when she was kind of the second act to then what looked like was going to be the best world heavyweight men's boxing champion. It made perfect sense to hitch her to him at the time, but she emerged from that shadow and is now a massive draw in her own right.
Okay. Let's move on to Sonia. We were obviously picking a bit of commentary. I think a lot of people will be familiar with the commentary from Sydney, one of the great moments in Irish sports. We could have picked the 1995 World Championship win in Gothenburg as well, but you've gone for something different. You're saying here that this is because of the amazing George Hamilton commentary as much as anything else. This is the double at the 1998 European Championships in Budapest, winning the 5,000 metres after already winning the 10,000 on the same year that, as Friday Quiz listeners will already know, She won the double at the World Cross Country Championships. In 98, it was a pretty good year.
The medals surely are between these three. They burned off Yevtic. Szabo tries to go for it. O'Sullivan responds. Szabo injecting the pace there. And Dominguez is sticking there as well. Who'd put money on whom at this point? Szabo, O'Sullivan and Dominguez between these three as they hit the crowd of the bend. Sonny O'Sullivan burned off Fernando Ribeiro in the 10,000 metres by going for home from this position. Can Szabo hold on? Can O'Sullivan strike? It's Szabo from O'Sullivan. Dominguez trying to come hard on the inside. O'Sullivan goes for it. And she's taken the lead. She's overtaken Szabo, and Sonia O'Sullivan is on her way to another magnificent victory. Szabo responds, but she won't do it. Sonia O'Sullivan is coming home to an unprecedented double. Sonia O'Sullivan adds to the 10,000 metre championship, the 5,000 metre championship of Europe, only the second athlete in history to do the 5,000, 10,000 double. Sonia O'Sullivan has rewritten the history books in Budapest this Sunday evening. That is simply magnificent.
Why'd you make that, Mick?
Well, I did want to play. I think George Hamilton, as an athletics commentator, is one of the most underrated in the world. But seeing as we'll stick to the subject of Sonia O'Sullivan. So I went down a Sonia rabbit hole yesterday, Ger, and enjoyed it very, very much. And the same figures are always there. It's Szabo, you know, it was the up and coming. It was Fernando Ribeiro. It was Paula Radcliffe. And a couple more, and they're all here. They're all in Budapest. It was a European championship in middle to long distance running at this time was a world championship. And she was absolutely dominant in 95 in Gothenburg. When 2000 came along, it's, I think, the pride that we all have in what happened in 2000 was the bravery and the living up to her potential. And, you know, she was a year after having a baby and to come back and win that silver and to stick with Szabo all the way. But this might have been her at her very, very best. She won the 10,000 and 5,000 within a couple of days of each other. In the 10,000, she beat Ribeiro and Radcliffe. She holds off Szabo in the 5,000. And she's just at her unbelievable best. And that feeling that we all have, Ger, when I'm watching these races, this might have been the best of it, where we all knew what that looked like because we watched Sonia so much, where they're coming around the bend, there's 200 metres to go, you're on the second last bend and she's on the shoulder, and you know before she passes out the girl in front of her, this is over. Sonia's going to win this by 50 yards, and she always did. And this was just a perfect encapsulation of it. She was just someone that I never, we're talking about the way Katie kind of gets you out of your seat. Sonia, for the era, I think, older, that me and Will would be in, and you, Ger, I suppose. would, like, she was that athlete for us. She was that sports person for us, where you watched her races and you just believed in her. And we don't have that so much with Irish athletes a lot. You hope more than believe a lot of the time, but you always believed in Sonia.
I thought it was really interesting this morning. We asked all the guests that were on who they would pick to put on their Irish boarding Mount Rushmore, and Nada Manua picked Sonia because he said he remembered watching her compete, and he's an athletics fan, and just the way she ran and the way the Irish support followed her, he said it always stuck with him, which I thought was interesting, that clearly she transcends not just Irish, or she transcends Irish people and to other nationalities as well, which is
pretty
cool.
That is very interesting, yeah. And Carl Tenney was making the case that we're obviously celebrating Rashida's NCAA title, Sonia won 5, and it's just like this, whoa. And to your point earlier about Mick, there not being very many Irish athletes who have reached that level where you just know what's going to happen. You've actually just said that you did know what was going to happen with Sonia, and there was that period of time, notwithstanding the success of the Chinese runners contemporaneously, and obviously massive suspicion around them. There is suspicion continued about Szabo. Stuff was found in the boot of a car when Szabo was travelling at one point. She says she had nothing to do with stuff in the boot of the car. It wasn't her car. She was just a passenger. Look.
No, but there is an argument that Sonia was the best pound for pound.
Best Irish runner. Athlete ever was Carl Dennehy's point.
Yeah, but yeah. I was saying that Katie pound for pound, it wasn't just her weight class.
Sorry, best Irish sports person ever was Carl Dennehy's point.
I wouldn't massively argue it, you know, I have to say. She'd be on my, and this is the thing about this actually that is worth a wider conversation. For all of the books written that don't include female athletes and so on, you look at that Mount Rushmore, I think two of them are on the overall one at least. And I think, you know, I think there's plenty of people in this country that would make the case for the likes of Rachel Blackmore to be on it as well, you know, that see the achievement she's had. So, you know, despite lack of recognition, some people forced their way through.
And obviously you've got the comeback story here. I mean, everyone was so kind of disappointed and frustrated after the Olympics in 96, and then for Sonia O'Sullivan to perhaps put some of her best form together between the two games in Atlanta and Sydney, that showed a real fight back from adversity. And again, I think I listened to that George Hamilton commentary. Maybe this is a symptom of the fact that we had less to watch on TV back then, but I can see Sonia's final kick and her coming around that bend in my mind as we're listening to the commentary. And again, similarly, 2002, I think you ask, or 2000, say most people can probably remember where they were. Mick and I were chatting about this earlier on. Like, I was in school. I remember the old style TV was actually rolled into the classroom.
Jenny Claffey had the exact same story this morning.
And I'm pretty sure it was either 11 o'clock break or lunchtime break when the race was happening.
Pretty sure it was lunchtime.
Yeah, I remember the bell going off, which would normally be our kind of go out to freedom moment, and everybody stayed in the class and watched the end of Sonia finishing out the race. So I would say for a lot of people, they would have had a love for Sonia O'Sullivan, which is there from watching these big moments on TV, like the Europeans been televised back then as well.
Might be one of the most ingrained sporting relationships as well. Like, I mean, I don't ever remember willing somebody on as much as those last 100 metres in Sydney, or feeling and then seeing that she was happy and then changing her entire outlook and then feeling happy for her and proud of her. It's like, I swear to God, I watched it yesterday and I started like tearing up again. You know, and it's just like, it always happens. I always think like, oh, I'll be over that now. And there's something about that race, something about the way she stuck. When she was beaten with 50 yards to go, she never lost another yard. No. And you would watch any race, you will not see that, because she just kept at it and kept at it. There was an amazing kind of like will, I suppose, that just powered her over the line on that one. That's amazing. But I do think that, I don't know, there was something visceral in the way we all did, and all the people I was watching it with felt, because we'd been watching her for so long. And maybe it's because of what happened in Atlanta as well. Yeah. Maybe added to that.
So it's actually the 1993 World Athletics Championships where Wang Zhongxia comes out and just runs everybody off the track. And in the 3,000 metres, Sonia finished fourth behind three Chinese athletes. And that was kind of the start of like, because she felt unbeatable at that point. Finished fourth in the previous year in the Olympics in Barcelona, and everyone was like, "Well, that's okay. That's your starting. You know, it's close and it's unfortunate, but your time will come." And it felt like the time was coming. And then all of a sudden, it's like, "Whoa, this mad setback." And then 96 is just this horrific setback, which I still don't fully understand exactly what happens. And 97 is not great either. And then so for there to be a moment at the end where you get your moment. And it is an Italian 90 moment. It is everybody huddled around the TV. And I think that was one of the points Gavin Casey made as well. 1.1 million watched Katie's fight. It's probably a good bit more when you factor in everything else. These are really, really important communal moments. Mm. And for them not to let down or not to fail under the stress and the pressure, it's like, whoa. Yeah.
She was less than a second and a half off gold in Barcelona, by the way. Like, it was a fourth place in a four, in a, you know, she was, I think it was a photo finish for bronze. You know, like, she was right there, yeah.
A Russian and a Ukrainian athlete ahead of her as well. Again, Carl Denny making the point that the early 1990s Russians, we just don't believe them. Anyway, so where was the controversy this morning? Because Emma Byrne was a shoe-in, I thought.
The controversy came where we kind of had a dead heat between our third and fourth picks. So both Sarah and Jenny had Rachel Blackmore on their lists. I had Emma Byrne and Cora. And then Sarah also had Cora on hers. So it kind of came between. In the end, we went with Rachel because the two others had very, very passionate responses to why they felt Rachel Blackmore deserved to be on it. So then it was a straight shootout between Cora and Emma Byrne. And I felt like in making the final decision, despite the fact Emma Byrne was on my original list, it was important to have GA represented on Mount Rushmore as our national game.
And why didn't you go for Breech Corkery then?
Well, so we were having this debate. Sarah O'Donovan was talking about having played with both of them and what Breech Corkery and Rena Buckley brought and playing against Cora. And she made the point that
she's never going to be allowed home.
Well, she made the point that she couldn't differentiate between Rena and Breech. That was the thing she was really struggling with. And that Cora, whenever they played against her, that she had to be double marked by Cork players, and that she was the sort of player who maybe didn't have the same support that those Cork players had, in that they were in a dream team that could work together and do it, whereas Cora dragged Mayo through quite a lot and then went to Australia and became an international star of sorts. So that was what edged her in the GA stakes.
She has 11 All-Stars and Breech Corkery has 11 football All-Stars and then another 6 Camogie All-Stars.
That's insane. It's pretty impressive.
It's or maybe it's 5, sorry. I know, I've lost Breech's page here. But here it is, yeah. So we got 16 All-Stars and I'm fairly sure 11 were football.
But 18... Yeah.
No matter how good those teams were, 18 All-Irelands and 16 All-Stars. It's just
Sorry. No, she only has the 10 All-Stars in football and 6 in Camogie.
Now, there is, it's not to, to caveat, but like, I mean, Cora won in some years where Mayo were poor. And, you know, you get to an All-Ireland final, you have a better chance of winning an All-Star. You win an All-Ireland, you have a much better chance of an All-Star. It's not to in any way downplay Breech Corkery, but I think a lot of these decisions are based on feeling rather than stats, and it's how important somebody was to a game. And I'll tell you honestly, when I knew nothing about ladies football, I knew about Cora Staunton, and there was this sense of, I remember before Katie became Katie, right, before the world titles came in and she was like an underage boxer, there was almost this idea of, oh yeah, Katie Taylor's another, winning another gold medal somewhere, you know, she's baiting the head off a lot of girls, you know. There was this kind of talk that before it was taken, we knew that she was this prodigy before we started actually watching her and taking it seriously. Cora was that in football. Cora was always, oh, what did Cora score? You know, 210, was it? Right, quiet game. So, you know, so I think that counts for a lot. I think it counts for a lot that she was a legend as much as anything else.
Sarah made the good point this morning. She brought up the old Lucozade ad that had the likes of Duff in it. It had Ronan O'Gara and Cora Staunton, and we played it this morning and you see all the young baby faces and then there's her running down the road. I think that proves that in a time when a lot of female athletes didn't have a very front-facing career or even any sort of media persona or general knowledge around them, unless you were very invested in the sport, she was the one who broke through, as you were saying, even if you didn't know anything.
Yeah, I think so.
That's a fair point.
Cora used to destroy teams when she played for Carnacon as well.
All Ireland with a small club.
Yeah, club level, it was just almost different gravy. It was someone who was stepping out and looked like a 16-year-old playing in a group of under-12s was how good Cora Staunton was. And many clubs went to double and triple marker. Not that that didn't happen in Intercounty as well, but you really got an impression of how far ahead she was. And it was, we Cora on the show on Tuesday night, and it was crazy just when Joe was reeling off some of the scorelines she was putting up at 13 and 14. And she had mentioned that she was playing, I think it was a minor semi-final, and then the All-Ireland senior final, and then was back out in the minor final, and she was scoring 210 and 17 while playing for the teams. And then Joe was like, and what age were you then? I was 14. So it just kind of gives you an impression of what a prodigy she was as well.
Yeah, that Lucas Aidat is great. It's Duffer, Owen Kelly, Ronan O'Gara, Peter Stringer, and Cora Staunton, Brendan Cummins, Pádraig Joyce, and they do all look like chiselers.
Yeah.
Okay. So no controversy really about Cora. She beat out Emma Byrne.
The thing is, you can make a case for so many of these people. I could sit here and probably make an incredibly confident case for Emma Byrne. But the thing that swayed us in the end was that if Emma Byrne's career had come a couple of years later and maybe she had the attention that's on women's football now, she would have cut through in the way that Cora did. But that didn't happen.
Or just to play devil's advocate, that the opposite is true, that she was actually the Cora of her time, where here is somebody who goes, takes the risks and rises to the very highest level, winning a European Cup, and then uses the power from that to influence the entire future of the sport in Ireland by leading the strike and knowing this is at the end of my career and I can actually be the figurehead for this because I'm not going to pay the price, whatever vindictive nature of the FAI might be, I can actually withstand that. And to go, I don't know, there's a...
As I said, you can make arguments every which way.
Yeah.
But I was told I wasn't allowed to bottle it and have a subs bench, so...
Our list of achievements are incredible. Like, it's I think... They were so overlooked at the time that I think now that we look at women's soccer in a different way, it's almost hard to go back and relitigate the past. But if you actually just do and you see what Arsenal have become like in terms of even the Emirates and so on for the last couple of weeks. And so it's like, that's on the back, that's built on the back of Emma Byrne and that team. I'm not going to say it was just Emma Byrne, but the fact that she was such a huge, huge part of it. Like, you know, we're talking about Katie being a pioneer.
There is a picture of Emma Byrne at the Emirates, is there?
There is. Her face is on the side with that team for that won the Champions League.
Okay.
Remember, FIFA bring Emma Byrne over to things like the Ballon d'Or ceremonies and have her playing in Legend games.
Yeah.
This is again someone
they
who's...
They flew her to the World Cup final in Qatar.
You know, there's like a...
That international recognition is important, though. And I appreciate that you would want to put on someone who plays ladies football or camogie onto the Rushmore. But I think there is... It's very, very difficult to differentiate.
So you would have had soccer ahead of them personally?
Yeah, I'd have Emma Byrne ahead, of course, don't.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
If it makes you feel any better, Jenny Claffey gave me a... Like, I thought she was going to reach across and kill me whenever I said that I was going to go down with Cora rather than Emma Byrne. She was absolutely outraged.
Why?
Because she felt a bit like what you guys were saying, that Emma Byrne has the international recognition and she changed the face of the sport. And also it's a sport that she has a lot of ties to as well, and which I don't want to argue
against myself here, because obviously someone will throw a strip back at me and go that Cora Staunton was a revelation in her 5 years in the women's AFL. But the women's AFL still feels like it's in its infancy at the moment. And while I totally respect her achievement, especially coming back from a bad injury...
It's basically a rip-off of GAA anyway.
Look, you can make that argument. But
can I just say the only thing on that, and I said this on the news round on Tuesday. You're talking about fledging sports. It is easier, you know, to change and to succeed in it. But Cora was in her late 30s.
And then was
the best goal scorer in the competition. You know what I mean? She was fantastic at it. She was like one of the best players at it and played until she was over 40 at a sport that she didn't recognise. You know, regardless of the levels of how hard it is to go up that, like that just shows you the talent level that was there.
And, insane. Yeah. We are picking nits here. That's the whole point of this. Yeah. It's because there's only room for four. And so then there was consensus around Rachel Blackmore. Let's have a listen to her Gold Cup win ending the perfect week in 2022.
As they race towards the second loss, Manella Indo has kicked three lengths clear. Plutarque now chasing over in second, Protectorate in third on the outside, in between the final two fences, and Plutarque is cutting Manella Indo back. The first two from last year, they're going to jump the last together, and it's Plutarque who got away much quicker, and Plutarque is storming up the hill. 6-7 lengths clear in the hands of Rachel Blackmore. She won the Champion Hurdle on Tuesday, the Grand National last year, and now it's the Gold Cup. Plutarque, a runaway winner.
I'm so overwhelmed. I just feel so lucky, you know, to be getting to ride these horses that bring you places like here, to be in Henry's Yard. You know, I just feel so lucky. Like, wasn't even 12 months ago I got to win an Ainter Grand National, and I don't know how or why I'm just so lucky to be in the position I'm in, but unbelievable.
Yeah, 14 Cheltenham Festival winners, as well as obviously there you've heard the Grand National, and I think the relationship with Honeysuckle is something you kind of can't talk too much about when it comes to this. There's horses capture the public's imagination and then everybody backs them and they become unbackable short price favourites, and then all the pressure's on and generally there's a letdown somewhere along the way at some point. But it didn't happen. Like, everybody piles on the pressure and she wins. And but then that week in 22 was the Champion Hurdle, the Irish Champion Hurdle, and the Cheltenham Gold Cup. Happened with the Grand National the previous year.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Cliona Foley on the show during the week made, I thought, a very interesting point about Rachel Blackmore, in that like the people who had led the way for her, like Nina Carberry and Katie Walsh, had come from racing, come from within, and when there's a natural barrier being her gender, they kind of got past that a little bit, given that they were already within the circles, whereas Rachel came from nowhere and had to pass that, had to get rides and become a professional, obviously, even as well, which is a big choice that neither Katie nor Nina did. You know, with that natural kind of like skepticism of who's this, you know, like, I mean, even being a prodigy wouldn't necessarily make people overlook that. But she fought through it and obviously then got the big, big rides that were enough for her to win these incredible races.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like she was a prodigy either. It seems like this is the product of incredible hard work.
Yeah.
You know, which is almost even more impressive.
Yeah, I didn't have her on my initial, if I was to do my own personal Mount Rushmore, but there's no denying what she has achieved. And I think as well, the fact that she feels like probably the only sportswoman that we have by virtue of the fact that she is competing against men, that there's never any specification of this is a woman doing this. She's kind of surpassed that. There's no need for the clarification, which I think is a sign of how good she is. And as well, you have the international recognition with her and the fact that she's racing over in England and so many people over there rate her so highly as well.
Yeah. Does it help in that regard, actually, that it takes away the argument of, well, what's the standard like? And, you know, the usual kind of like dismissals of women's sport achievement. There's no argument to be made when it comes to Rachel Blackmore. Yeah.
I think it definitely does. And I have to say it's incredibly refreshing to be able to talk about sport in that way and not have to constantly clarify standard levels or whether the sport is a fledgling sport or what the standard of people around them is, like we have to do sometimes with Katie Taylor when people question that. Yeah. With her, it's just a very straightforward case.
Yeah.
When I was thinking about this, Jared, there's only two things that were kind of in my mind about it. One was a certain degree of recency bias whereby Rachel Blackmore's achieved so much in the last kind of 3-4 years, so therefore it's very much at the forefront of our minds when you're comparing it to some of the legends here if you're talking about a Final Four. And the other thing is obviously there is a collaborative effort here whereby
the horse,
yeah, well, I mean,
the horse is Rushmore.
That's what he's saying. Yeah.
But if Henry de Bromhead is not training the horse as well,
exactly,
it's
exactly
a time particularly for the 22 Cheltenham whereby he had all of his best horses firing well, but Rachel Blackmore at the same time is steering them to success. Yeah. At a time when, let's be fair, they would have been the underdogs going into
totally
that Cheltenham.
I think
I think you can't take away from Rachel Blackmore's achievement. There's a synergy there between horse, trainer and jockey whereby I don't think you can say that it's one over the other, or as you were about to say, Nathan did last night, why not want to put the horse on the Blackmore there?
Yeah.
Or on the Rushmore
it is always the tricky part where the trainers always say you can't win unless you have the horses, and the jockeys all say it's us who's winning. And the trainers are like, no, it's the horse. Look, that's always one of those great unknowns when it comes to trying to pick the nits of like where the jockeys go, because you would make the case that Ruby had a slightly better career overall when you're talking about who would go on the...
Well, McCoy as well, you know.
Yeah, but like, and then it's, well, McCoy had the best horses and he rode in every race and, you know.
Davy Russell had years of jigging sound horses. And
yeah, so...
Blackmore's also not done as well.
Oh yeah,
that's the thing. Yeah, that is the thing.
Who's the most egregious? Are we saying that Emma is the closest to getting on?
Katie McCabe didn't get close.
No, I think she still has a bit more to do. You could even look at the fact that Nifahi has more league titles than her, is permanent Liverpool captain. There's an argument there that in terms of what she's actually achieved in that sense,
one in All Ireland with Galway.
I think probably Emma Byrne or Rosemary Smith for me are the two closest to getting on.
Mabel Cattle obviously springs to mind to a certain extent here as well, but the problem is that none of us have ever seen her play. That you can only ever read about that in the history books. But it is a remarkable achievement to have won 5 US Open tennis titles. Like the way the story ends as well, very sadly, that she dies destitute in the UK. We're not even sure where she passed away or when, such was the way that things had fallen for her. But to have someone who grew up in Kilkenny to go over to the States and to win 5 US Open tennis titles is pretty remarkable. The only problem is, a bit like when people talk about, you know, we would have argued, say, over the Rushmores around the counties, you could talk about someone who was brilliant in the 30s or 40s and all you know is the legend as opposed to having seen it with your own eyes.
Arthur was actually making the point after listening to Tommy that that is the great disservice that was done to women's sport, and that we are kind of reliant on the rolls of honour to talk about characters in the 50s, 60s and 70s, that the coverage wasn't adequate and probably still in many respects isn't, but it is getting better. Yeah. And I think that was the point that Nora Stapleton made brilliantly during the week, that coverage of women's sport was suppressed deliberately for decades and decades and decades. So it's time now for us to right that wrong and hopefully
it's interesting
to start.
Because none of us would ever, like if we were doing a hurling Mount Rushmore, none of us will have ever seen Christy Rinclay, but we'd put him on because we've read so much and heard so much in her testimony, whereas none of that exists pre whenever for women's athletes. Yeah.
There's that tiny bit of footage of Christy Ring that was filmed for the documentary that was made about him that you can kind of see the movement and the quality of, but like it's, and you're extrapolating off the back of watching other hurlers and what they could do. And then obviously there is the testimony, and that was covered at least by three or four journalists at the time
who would have
written down everything, and those stories passed into lore. But it was the suppression of coverage that's now, hopefully we're getting there, but a lot done.
Surely,
but
surely. Yeah.
Great week though.
Yeah, well done, Kathleen. Great idea. Brilliantly executed. Plenty of arguments happening in the comments, no doubt, if you're watching this on YouTube, or of course you can argue to your heart's desire on the Instagram bits that we'll put up as well. We're also available on Twitter at Off The Ball. But Mount Rushmore, International Women's Day is in the books.
Completed it.